Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1844, with a release date of December the 14th, 2012. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST, a high-altitude balloon carrying an amateur radio APRS transponder, flies from California to Morocco. D-Star tests coming to the high-frequency bands. Two nations on opposite sides of the world gain access to 472 to 479 kilohertz. And more on the Department of Homeland Security-sponsored emergency communications training at the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. Find out details right now on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1844, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
A group of high-altitude balloon experimenters have achieved a milestone, this with confirmation that their K6RPT-12 APRS-equipped high-altitude balloon has successfully crossed the Atlantic and landed in Morocco. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has the details.
Amateur radio stations from the United Kingdom to the Azores had been listening for the transatlantic balloon signing K6RPT-12 on 144.390 MHz FM. This after it was lofted skyward from California at about 0126 UTC on Monday, December 3rd. The balloon was launched by the California Near Space Project team with the intent of it crossing the Atlantic, heading for the British Isles. When it left the USA, it was traveling at over 185 miles an hour, but this was believed to have slowed down in its overwater trek to as little as 55 miles an hour. Knowing this, the payload was designed for over 60 hours of flight. It also included a heating system for its 144.390 MHz FM transmitter developed by Jonathan Corgan, AE6HO, to prevent it from freezing during the overnight flight. This was because the bitterly cold night temperatures at that altitude have caused the transmitters on several amateur radio balloons to fail. After its journey across the Atlantic, its APRS signals were first picked up by stations in Spain. It was last heard at 09:22:31 UTC on December the 5th, descending rapidly, indicating that the balloon had finally burst. Its last recorded position was 34 degrees 25.75 north and 3 degrees 58.96 west, placing it in the Taza province of Morocco, north-northeast of Tazika National Park. It is believed that there are less than 150 radio amateurs in Morocco and no known APRS stations. As such, the balloon and its payload may never be recovered. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
It should be noted that the amateur radio APRS frequency is not standardized worldwide. The United States uses 144.390 MHz, while the British Isles and Europe use 144.8 MHz. To see the K6RPT-12 APRS reported flight track, please take your web browser to tinyurl.com/K6RPT-12 on the World Wide Web. D-Star is coming to a high-frequency band near you. According to a post on the Illinois D-Star Reflector by Kent Hufford, KQ4KK, D-Star high-frequency tests will be held on Saturday at midnight UTC and Sunday at 1500 hours UTC. D-Star operation will last only 5 minutes on each band, beginning on 6 meters and working down to 10, 12, 15, 17, 20, 40, and finally 75 meters. The test will be compatible with ICOM 9100 series transceivers and other D-Star equipped high-frequency transceivers. The posting did not mention specific frequencies to be used, but asked those interested to monitor D-Star reflector Z30C to coordinate. Hams in New Zealand are getting access to the 472 to 479 kilohertz band. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, has more.
At the World Radio Communication Conference held earlier this year, the band from 472 kHz to 479 kHz was allocated to the amateur service for use worldwide on a secondary basis. Some nations almost immediately opened it to use by their ham radio communities, and now it's become our turn here down under. It's now been agreed that New Zealand amateurs will be given access to this band following agreements made with the Radio Spectrum Policy and Planning Group of the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment. And the rules they came up with are quite simple. Like the rest of the world, the frequency range will be 472 kHz to 479 kHz on a secondary, non-interfering basis with other spectrum users. Power output will be 25 watts effective radiated with no bandwidth restrictions. As a result of this new allocation, New Zealand hams will lose access to the previous temporary low frequency allocation from 505 to 515 kHz. However, the Ministry has agreed that the temporary use of the band by this nation's ham radio community will be permitted for another 12 months until the end of 2013. This is to provide amateurs with the opportunity to retune or rebuild their equipment to use the new band. All in all, not a bad way to end 2012 and begin the new year. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachins at L2BHF in Nelson, New Zealand.
The rules creating the 472 to 479 kHz low band frequency in New Zealand are effective on December the 20th. Meantime, over in the United Kingdom, holders of a UK full-class license will soon be able to apply for a notice of variation to their ham tickets. This to use 472 to 479 kHz, as well as three additional 5 MHz channels that will permit up to 6 kHz bandwidth emissions. The new 472 to 479 band is being created as a result of the World Radio Communications Conference held earlier this year. The added spectrum in the experimental band is the outcome of negotiations between the spectrum primary user and telecommunications regulator Ofcom. The primary user was unable to agree to contiguous spectrum. However, it has been agreed that three additional non-contiguous frequencies will be available. Notices of variation will be accepted after January the 1st of 2013. Details on the application process will be published shortly. The Federation of Radio Sport of Azerbaijan and St. Vincent and the Grenadines Amateur Radio Club are the two newest members of the International Amateur Radio Union. The Radio Sport of Azerbaijan has some 50 members, while the Grenadines Amateur Radio Club holds 21. Both nations have relatively small ham radio populations, with the former representing all 50 of its ham radio population and the latter representing 21 of the nation's 134. A confrontational United Nations Internet Regulation Treaty being discussed at a gathering in Dubai may impact on amateur radio operators. This according to the telecommunications information website, dot-nxt. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, explains.
At the heart of the issue is the term operating agencies. Currently, the International Telecommunications Regulations, or ITRs, apply only to recognized operating agencies. This really means the large telecommunications operators in each country, such as AT&T and Verizon here in the United States. Some countries want that term changed to read just agencies. This would mean that ITRs would become applicable to a vastly larger number of groups. So rather than just AT&T and British Telecom or Italia Telecom and the like, the international treaty would then apply to telecom entities such as Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and eBay, just to name a few. In reality, just about every internet company, as well as private network operators, leased line operators, government agencies, and even, believe it or not, amateur radio operators would be included in the new definition. But the idea is not setting well with many developed nations. Opposed so far are the United States, Canada, Japan, Korea, Mexico, Poland, and the Pan-European CEPT, as well as the Inter-American Telecommunications Commission, which is better known by its acronym CITEL. On the other side, in favor of the change are the Arab states, African states, Brazil, India, the Philippines, and several other nations. In the meantime, the entire conference risks grinding to a halt until this issue can be resolved. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
You can find out more about the situation online at tinyurl.com/WCIT-meeting-2012. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W6GNS repeater serving Downey, California. On A ham in Kansas has been issued a $10,000 notice of apparent liability to monetary forfeiture for allegedly operating an unlicensed FM broadcast station. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the details.
The proposed $10,000 fine was issued on December 5th to Glenn Rubash, licensee of amateur radio station KC0GPV. This for what the FCC terms as his apparent willful and repeated violation of Section 301 of the Communications Act. This by operating an unlicensed radio transmitter on the frequency 88.3 megahertz in Manhattan, Kansas. By way of background, this past September 26, agents from the Enforcement Bureau's Kansas City office T-hunted the source of an 88.3 megahertz signal to a transmitting antenna mounted on a pole next to a resident in Manhattan, Kansas. The agents determined that the signals from the antenna exceeded the limits for operation under Part 15 of the communications rules and therefore required a license. The commission's records showed that no authorization was issued to anyone for operation on an FM broadcast station at or near this address. On September 27th, the agents from the Kansas City office again used direction-finding techniques to confirm if the station was still operating on 88.3 from the same location and found that it was. The agents, accompanied by the property owner, inspected the unlicensed station's antenna and transmitter. The latter was located in a locked, detached garage. The property owner stated that he allowed Rubash to use the garage to operate the station and that he thought the operation was legal because Rubash told him that he was a licensed radio operator. Later that same day, a person identified as Glenn Rubash spoke to an agent from the Kansas City office by telephone. At this time, the regulatory agency claimed that Rubash confirmed that he was an extra-class amateur licensee assigned to call sign KC0GPV. He also admitted that he purchased the radio transmitter and that the station had been on the air for 2 months. The person on the phone reportedly added that he would not voluntarily relinquish the transmitter if asked to do so. Now the FCC has acted in the case. It concludes, based on the evidence before it, that Mr. Rubash apparently willfully and repeatedly violated Section 301 of the Act by operating radio transmission equipment without the required commission authorization, and as such is liable for the proposed $10,000 fine. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
As is customary, Rubash was given the usual 30 days to pay the proposed fine or to file an appeal. The Department of Homeland Security's Office of Emergency Communications has announced that on January the 14th, 2013, it will begin accepting registration requests for the training class that it will be sponsoring next May at the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. Students requesting to attend must meet all of the prerequisites and provide electronic scanned images of certain documents at the time of registration. These include proof of completion of the FEMA Emergency Incident Instructional Sessions, IS-100.B, IS-200.B, IS-700.A, and IS-800.B. They must also provide a copy of their general class or above FCC amateur radio license. The DHS says that it's important that all listed documents be submitted at one time, along with the registration request, in order to be considered. The session is limited to 50 students, and the registration process will be closed when that number of qualified students is reached. But even if you are not amongst the 50 selected to attend the session, there will be other training available. Word is that the instructors conducting the course will also be giving a forum at the Hamvention's 2013 regarding the use of trained amateur radio operators as backup communicators in an emergency operations environment. More information, including the actual class and the email address for pre-registration, will soon be posted online at www.hamvention.org. Australian Search and Rescue was recently alerted that an activated emergency position indicating radio beacon, or EPIRB, had been stolen from the city of South Melbourne. After narrowing down its initial search, Search and Rescue called in the expertise of a field inspector from the Australian Communications Authority, or ACMA. Using a Yagi directional antenna, he eventually found the errant device hanging from overhead power lines. It was safely retrieved for evidence by members of the Victoria Police. For those not aware, EPIRBs are automatic or manually activated search and rescue beacons linked to satellites when turned on. The Moose Jaw Canada Times Herald reports that kids in that city had a chance to tell their holiday gift request to Santa up at the North Pole using amateur radio. Brenda McKenzie, VE5TRG, and other members of the Moose Jaw Amateur Radio Club operated the ham radio links, and you can read the complete story online, tinyurl.com/moose-jaw-holiday. Oklahoma's Lawton Constitution newspaper reports that students at the Eisenhower Middle School's Amateur Radio Club recently commemorated the 71st anniversary of Pearl Harbor Day. The club held the tribute to honor all veterans, but especially the 2,402 Americans killed in the December 7, 1941 Japanese sneak attack on the United States base in Hawaii. Clifton Harper, KE5YZB, is the teacher who sponsors the Amateur Radio Club. He told the newspaper that students started contacting other amateur radio operators around the world at 8:30 in the morning and continued until 3:30 in the afternoon, both local time. Three separate stations were in use, including one in a trailer from the Lawton Amateur Radio Club operating as W5KS. According to the newspaper, about 140 students took part in the event throughout the school day. More is now online at tinyurl.com/Lawton-Pearl-Harbor. Registration to attend the free mini contest university at Australia's Wyong Field Day in February the 2013 is now open. For details, please visit tinyurl.com/contest-u-down-under on the World Wide Web. Some names in the news. Jose Tamayo, KK4JZX, has been named to receive the 2012 Handy Ham's Manager Technology Award. This for his dedication to the Handy Ham Remote Base Software Update Project. According to the Handy Hams, Tamayo has done exemplary work to debug and update the two existing W4MQ remote-based clients and software. He's led the beta testing team and is working to build accessibility into the newest version of this important remote control client. The Space Adventures Agency has confirmed that famed British soprano Sarah Brightman has signed an agreement with the Russian Space Agency and secured herself a space trip to the International Space Station for some time in 2015. As previously reported here on Amateur Radio Newsline about 2 months ago, the singer was cleared to fly by a medical commission and set her schedule to begin her training at Russia's Cosmonaut Training Center outside of Moscow. More recently, Brightman told a Russian newspaper she'll also have to learn to speak some Russian before her space trip to be able to communicate with the crew. Brightman's eventual arrival on orbit will denote a long period between visitors to the orbiting outpost. The last visitor was Cirque du Soleil founder Guy Laliberté, who traveled into space in 2009. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur from the United States of America. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org. and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. The changing of the guard in amateur radio continues with the sad news that John Wood Sr., WV5J, who served as CQ's new product editor since 2009, passed away December 3rd after a brief battle with cancer. A lifelong journalist, Wood spent most of his career as a reporter and editor for newspapers in and around Memphis, Tennessee. He lived in Memphis in the suburb of Germantown. A contributor to CQ for several years on a variety of topics, John became an editor of what's called the What's New column as of the magazine's December 2009 issue. He continued writing occasional feature articles as well. His most recent, There's a Secret Service in Memphis on the 222 Ham Band, appeared in the fall 2012 issue of CQ VHF. Wood is survived by his wife of 41 years, Marie, WA4WFX, his son John Jr., KI4VCK, his daughter Christy, and two grandchildren. The family requests that contributions in John's memory be made to the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. At the time of his passing, John Wood Sr., WV5J, was only age 61. The man who invented helicopter coverage for television has died. John D. Silva was the chief engineer for Los Angeles television station KTLA when he convinced station executives to give him $40,000 to outfit a rented Bell helicopter with a TV camera for news coverage. Silva then worked in secrecy with Hollywood special effects shops and engineers from the General Electric Corporation to find or invent technology small and light enough to fit in a helicopter. He and his small team broadcast their first air-to-ground signal on July 28, 1958, to Los Angeles viewers who would eventually come to equate a helicopter news coverage with a high-speed police pursuit and the like. In an interview with Smithsonian Air and Space Magazine, Silva said he came up with the idea while on a freeway. He explained that while he was driving on the Hollywood freeway one morning, when the idea came to him, Silva told the Air and Space Museum that he never thought about being a pioneer, rather, all he ever wanted to do was to get KTLA news there and get a better picture before the competition got it. The Los Angeles Times reported Silva died in Camarillo, California, of pneumonia complications. He was aged 92. The historic amateur radio station is going QRT for good. Over the weekend of December the 15th and the 16th, station GB2BP will be making its final transmissions from the famed Bletchley Park Estate in the United Kingdom. Bletchley Park has been the home of GB2BP, as well as serving as the location of its sponsors, the Milton Keynes Amateur Radio Society, for the past 18 years. But both are being forced to vacate the estate due to a change in its status to a museum. This will mean it'll have to be scheduled opening and closing times, after which there will be no public access. For those who are not aware of Bletchley Park's significance, during World War II, it was the site of the United Kingdom's main message intercept center, where ciphers and codes of several Axis countries were decrypted. The most important of these were the ciphers generated by the German Enigma and Lorenz machines. Well, the work done here is generally credited as one of the main reasons that the Allies won the war. While GB2BP may no longer be in the full-time residence on the Bletchley Park estate, it will reappear occasionally as a special event station, supporting public events at the new museum. Russian cosmonaut Mikhail Kornienko, RN-3BF, along with NASA astronaut Scott Kelly, have been chosen for a one-year-long assignment aboard the International Space Station. According to NASA, the mission, which will begin in 2015, will include collecting scientific data that will be important to the future of human exploration of our solar system. It should also help researchers to understand better how the human body reacts and adapts to the harsh environment of space as NASA plans for missions around the moon, to an asteroid, and ultimately to Mars. Researchers say that NASA's long-lived Voyager 1, which is heading out of the solar system, has reached what they call the magnetic highway leading to interstellar space. Voyager 1 will be the first man-made object to leave the solar system. Scientists believe the probe is currently in an area of deep space where the magnetic field lines from the sun are intersecting with magnetic field lines from interstellar space. They believe that this phenomenon is causing highly energetic particles from distant supernova explosions and other cosmic events to zoom inside the solar system, while less energetic solar particles exit. The Voyager 1 probe was launched 35 years ago to study the outer planets. It's currently some 11 billion miles from Earth. At that distance, it takes radio signals traveling at the speed of light 17 hours to reach Earth. Voyager 2, which is traveling on a different path out of the solar system, has experienced similar, though more gradual, changes in its environment than Voyager 1. Scientists do not believe Voyager 2, which is about 9 billion miles from Earth, has yet reached the magnetic highway to interstellar space. On the air, the ARRL Puerto Rico State Convention operates special event station N4D from January the 11th to the 25th to commemorate the first ever ARRL convention to be held there. The frequency to listen out on are 14.250, 21.350, and 28.450 on the high frequency bands, as well as locally on 147.550 FM on 2 meters. For more information on the convention and the special event station N4D, it's online now, www.arrlpr.org. In DX, DD0VR and DD3BWR will be active from Vietnam through January the 4th as XV0VR. During their stay, they'll also plan to operate from Cat Ba Island, December the 18th through the 20th, and Phu Quoc Island from December the 30th through January the 2nd. QSL these operations via DD0VR. JA7LU will be active from Phu Quoc Island, Vietnam, January the 12th to the 16th as XV4LU. He'll be operational on 40 through 10 meters on single sideband, RIDI, and you can QSL direct via his home call sign. KE4TG will be active as a J38RF from Grenada between February the 6th and March the 8th. His primary interest is the digital modes, but he may operate some CW and single sideband. QSL via his home call sign direct is listed on QRZ.com. His logs will be uploaded to Logbook of the World. Lastly, several sources are reporting that a team of 10 operators will be active from Robinson Crusoe Island during mid-2013. It's also mentioned that this is the same group who activated D-64K earlier this year. Look for more details coming soon. And finally this week, while hams and researchers look for now venerable CubeSats as communications and scientific research space platforms, a company in Scotland has come up with its own idea. How about space burials? No, we're not kidding. As we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lasik, K9BIK.
A Glasgow-based company called Albaspace is planning to use CubeSats for just that, burials of human remains in space. According to the FAQ on the Albaspace website, the company will take a portion of one's cremated ash and integrate it into its spacecraft called the AlbaCube. It will then launch it skyward using a commercial service provider who takes it from Earth into space. Why choose space burial over other forms of end-of-life celebration? Albaspace says that space is a place where only very few and very fortunate people have had the chance to venture. The company says that it wants to help make space become a place that is accessible to the public and enable those who have an interest in it to fulfill their life's ambition to do so. It notes that, after passing on, that 75% of people in the United Kingdom get cremated, and you have to do something with the ashes. So why not ride into space? Will this be a burial option only for the rich and famous? Not according to Albaspace. It says that, while it has not yet launched its pricing options, it is aiming for it to be competitively priced with other funeral options. This so the average consumer can afford to take part. And if you'll excuse a pun or two, this could be another fascinating use for the final frontier, or the most extreme of extreme DX. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Essek, K9BIK in Zion, Illinois.
Albaspace says it's still not sure when its space burial service might begin. It says that it's currently at its market's research phase and are trying to gauge the demand for different services, such as suborbital, low Earth orbit, and beyond. More about Alba's space plans online, www.albaorbital.com. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD in Vero Beach, Florida, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline's copyright 2012. All rights are reserved.